This is the Humboldt Chronicles.
I am the queen of everything. Gotta be high before I can sway. Light a tea and let it be. If you a viper.
I'm Chuck Rogers with producer Larry Trask. The Humboldt Chronicles is made possible by Eco Groovy Deals, Satori Wellness, Humboldt Patient Resource Center, Sensa Valley, and Heart of Humboldt. Thank you very much. Couldn't do it without you. Elections. Most of the talk leading up to the November elections this year was about blue waves, red waves, ripples, tsunamis. Somewhat outside the mainstream coverage of all things politics this year were those who were actually hoping for a green wave on the cannabis front. Overall, it was, in fact, a winning election cycle for marijuana. Missouri and Utah, that's deep red Utah, approved medical marijuana. Michigan broke through in the Midwest and gave the okay to recreational use for adults. Playing the role of breakwater, though, against the green wave was North Dakota, where a measure to legalize recreational use failed. Something common among all those states, however, was that the cannabis question did seem to have the effect of helping to increase voter turnout in what was already an energized political moment. So let's do some traveling. We'll hear from people working on both sides of this issue with stops in Michigan and North Dakota. Some of the audio is courtesy of KXMB in Bismarck and also courtesy of the Associated Press. First stop, Michigan.
Yesterday, the state of Michigan voted to legalize adult use marijuana and hemp. So essentially, adults 21 years of age and older would be able to legally possess up to 2.5 ounces of flower.
That's Margot Bruner, a proponent of legalized marijuana who worked for its voter approval in Michigan. Also in Michigan, there will be a new governor. The governor-elect is Gretchen Whitmer. Here's her take on legalized marijuana in her state.
You know, a lot of states have moved forward. It is time for Michigan to move forward, and I will respect the will of the people. They have spoken. And so it's on me and to work with the Attorney General to ensure that we have thoughtful, you know, regulations that we promulgate.
Some of the activists who worked on legalization in Michigan already have an eye on what they think will be the next step. Here again is Margot Bruner.
We've crossed a major threshold. So Michigan is the 10th state to legalize adult use, plus District of Columbia, so that's 11. And then 30 states prior to last night, I think two more came on board last night, so 32 states have medical marijuana. So more than half of the United States has legalization in some form. And I think the next step is not actually state-by-state legalization. I think that we're getting closer to federal legalization.
Oh, wait a minute. Opponents, though, are not ready to concede that fact yet. They're not convinced the fight is over. There was that win in Michigan, yes, but also a loss in North Dakota. This is Kevin Sabat, opponent of legalization of marijuana.
In Michigan, what was on the ballot was a proposal to legalize not only personal possession of marijuana, but also the retail sales and cultivation of marijuana. In North Dakota, it was the same thing. It was personal possession, also expungement of records, and the legalization of recreational and commercial sales. But North Dakota was about a 60-40 spread against legalization in North Dakota. This whole discussion is far from over. So, you know, the battle on legalization might have been won, but I think the war is far from over. This country is very split on this issue. This is a national conversation that we're going to have.
So let's go to North Dakota, where in 2016, medical marijuana was approved by the voters, but never implemented by the state. This is Josh Dreyer with Legalize ND.
The state just completely destroyed the bill that was put in place. And personally, I felt like this was going to be a very good loophole. It's time. It's happening all over America. You know, as if a place this red could be this positive for it, it's just a matter of time before it's everywhere.
But the numbers and the results tell the story. North Dakota is just not there yet. This is Dave Owen. He's chairman of Legalize ND.
For me, it's been 3.5 long years, and it's worth every second. We met thousands of people. We got to hear from everybody across the state about why they think this is a good idea.
So what to do next? Well, apparently, the fight in North Dakota is going to go on. In fact, they're talking about next time focusing a little more on aspects of legalization that red state conservatives could actually support.
There are aspects of it that are very conservative, like a lot. For example, we spend $41,000 a year to incarcerate someone for a plant, okay? And we could send them to UND for 4 years for that price.
So the fight will go on, and proponents of legalization are energized about their prospects going forward. The question is, though, do opponents still have a chance? Are we already at a tipping point on this issue nationally? Here again is Margot Bruner in Michigan, who fought for legalization there.
I'm excited that people will have the opportunity to see a regulated market and all the opportunities that come with that industry, because now it's a legitimate industry.
And just to follow up on that, it wasn't just general ballot measures that voters responded to. Legalization was also an issue for some individual candidates this November who had to take a stand and decide whether to support or oppose the continued move toward legalization. As examples, the question was very important in gubernatorial races in Illinois and Colorado. In both cases, the candidate who supported legalization won the governor's race. Oh, but wait. There was a big old no on marijuana right here in California. Yep, Kern County rejected three cannabis measures that would have allowed medical and recreational cannabis dispensaries to operate in the county. All failed. And in the city of Bakersfield, another question failed. It would have allowed medical dispensaries in the city of Bakersfield. So in that area, it was no, 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 and no. Kern County and Bakersfield.
And Larry, by contrast to Kern County, here in Humboldt County, as we know, with a few exceptions, this area has gone full bore into this issue, trying to make the best of it and the most of it.
You know, not obviously not surprising given the fact that this is Humboldt County, but yeah. Even within Humboldt County, as we all know, there's differing opinions on the role that cannabis should play.
Yeah, but it was a complete shutout in Kern County. The county itself and the county seat and the largest city in that area, Bakersfield, all know. No, 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 no.
Yeah.
That's all they had to say. Okay. Here, though, at least we're saying, okay, this is the reality. How are we going to make the best of it?
And it just so happens, Chuck, that I recently talked to some of the people who were responsible for crafting the way that Humboldt County responded to Prop 64.
And that would be?
Well, Natalie Royal, who's a Eureka City Councilperson from Ward 3, and Kim Burgell, who was City Councilperson for Ward 3, but is now the newly elected City Council Representative for Ward 5.
Okay. Yeah, there was a switch there in Eureka, right?
Yeah exactly. Yeah. And so I asked them both how they felt the implementation of Proposition 64 has been going so far in Eureka, and here's what they had to say.
I'm happy so far with how we've progressed. I honestly wish we had made more decisions earlier to be set up to process more applications more quickly so that a number of businesses could have gotten in a little bit earlier because I think that, you know, being first or being, you know, having your foot in the door right away certainly helped businesses. By and large, I think I'm very happy with the results thus far. It doesn't seem to be a detriment. It only seems to be a positive from what I've seen in Eureka. And I'm looking forward to a number of additional retail facilities being able to open and manufacturing and other facilities of all license types throughout the city.
I believe that the city has been doing a really great job with implementation and supporting cannabis businesses in our city. I think that we've really worked hard to streamline permitting, to try and make people feel comfortable, those kinds of things. There has been issue at times with, I feel like they're very overregulated, but you know, for now, that's the process that they have to go through. But I think that they should be treated just like other businesses. I feel like that there's still, perhaps it's, you know, there's still fear behind that. So currently there's a lot of regulation that goes with that. We want to make sure that, you know, the odor isn't there, that there are safety precautions in place, you know, all those things that don't apply to a distillery or a winery or a brewery or candy making factory, those kinds of things.
So Larry, Natalie Arroyo, Kim Burgell, they've been around since the implementation of Prop 64 locally, right?
That's right.
They were on the council when all of that happened. But there is a new political voice, the new mayor of Eureka, Susan Seaman, who's been around a while working on economic issues, but now she's the mayor of Eureka, the largest city in this area. So her views on this are obviously important.
Yeah, absolutely. And when I talked to her last week, I asked her how she felt things had been going so far in terms of rolling out this new set of regulations for what is really a new industry. Mm-hmm. And this is what she said.
I think Eureka has done a pretty good job. We got going as quickly as we could, and I think we have tried to be clear about what it is we want to do. There are some weird things Eureka's done. Just the fact that we cannot have signs in front of a cannabis business is bizarre to me. So we have these few little ordinances, I guess, that we've created that to me feel like a punishment, which I think is not necessary for a cannabis business. They need all the help they can get. So I do think that the city staff has really been proactive in trying to anticipate the needs and the opportunities in the community, and that has been working well. I think we were clear in sort of what our role is in Eureka. We're not an agricultural city, and so I think we're trying to focus on different parts of the industry, and where people generally just think about growing and dispensaries, we're looking at testing and manufacturing and a whole industry of businesses. It's just more complicated than a simple thought about what cannabis is.
So it seems like there's general feeling that things have been going fairly well with the rollout. But I think one thing that Eureka did that was smart, if you look at, for example, the way that they've been permitting dispensaries and retail outlets, they started out with this process whereby they would take two sort of pre-qualified applicants every 6 months and kind of go very slowly in terms of permitting these retail outlets just to see how it went, what problems, what things need to be changed.
Walk before you run.
Exactly. Okay. And so based on what they've learned, they've already made a change to the way that they're permitting the dispensaries, in that they're no longer having this 2 per 6 month limited number. Now they're taking all applicants. They're still going through this pre-qualification process, but if more than two emerge as qualified, they're not going to limit it to just two. That's one change they've made.
So it's unlimited now,
as long as they meet these pre-qualification requirements.
So they'll decide what the market can bear at the time, and they're not restricted by exactly how many other than the market.
Exactly.
Does that help us answer a question that you and I have asked before, and that is tourism and how tourism is going to work here? In other words, how are we going to attract people here? What are they going to be able to do when they get here? Are they going to be able to consume? Are there going to be enough retail outlets for them? Things like that. Does this get us into that direction?
Well, Chuck, it's funny you should ask that. Because I asked those very questions to some Eureka City Council person, both people who were reelected and new council persons, and we had quite a lively discussion. So we're going to do that. We got to take a break right now.
Okay.
But we're gonna get into all that right after the break. And before we hit the break, we've got a retail minute from Harry of Heart of Home.
When they ask for cannabis, they usually want it to be from Northern California. People come from Colorado to visit Humboldt County. I don't know a whole lot of people that go to Colorado to see how their scene's going from here. You'd think if you get XYZ nutrients from a grow shop here or from a farmer supply shop here, and you buy those exact same nutrients at, say, a shop in Florida or Texas or Illinois, that you would get the exact same results. But, you know, I kind of liken it to New York-style pizza in Northern California. The only New York-style pizza you're ever going to get is going to be in New York City, just because the pollution in the water, I guess? I don't know. I mean, with that being said, it also has to do with the culture in this county, that you have amassed such an amount of top-shelf growers that the internet can't even keep up with that. California is always going to be the epicenter of it. You know, it's even the indoor that's grown in Humboldt County is better than a lot of the real top shelf, big name stuff I see from further south in the state that's supposed to be top shelf. And I think a lot of it has to do with is cultivators up here do share their knowledge amongst each other. And they're not, I mean, everybody wants to be the best, but they're not afraid to share what they have. And there's an epicenter of really, really, really good growers here that doesn't exist like that anywhere else on the face of this earth. This is Harry, and remember, laughter is always the best medicine, and we'll help to get you there at the Heart of Humboldt, 601 I Street in Arcata. You can also check us out on Leafly or Weed Maps or Instagram for the menu and deals, or you can just roll in and keep the Heart of Humboldt beating.
Welcome back to the Humboldt Chronicles. I'm Chuck Rogers with producer Larry Trask. If you're just joining us, we've been discussing the recent elections in November and the implications of those elections on the cannabis issue, both nationally and locally. And our discussion so far has gotten us to the point where we're beginning to ask, how much retail availability do we need in this area when you think about the local population, but also adding eventually tourists to this area? How do we move forward on this? We asked incoming Eureka Mayor Susan Seaman about that.
You know, I think that the market will let us know how many we can handle. There's so much that people will be able to buy. If we had 25 dispensaries, they would probably not all make it. I mean, that's the way the market works, right? But the slower it is that we let them trickle out, the more we make them wait to open, the more likely they are to leave, and then we don't have that opportunity. And maybe it's the seventh or eighth business that really has something that we don't recognize that's going to be great and wonderful. I think we need to allow them to speed that up and then let the market see what happens.
So that was incoming Mayor Susan Seaman, who seems to be taking a market-based approach and to determine the right number of retail outlets for Eureka. We put the same question to Natalie Arroyo, City Council member from Ward 3, and she seemed to echo that market-based philosophy.
We are at least conceivably about to have, you know, more than 10 retail outlets in the near future if all of the invited applicants are able to move forward. I'm not sure if they've all been able to follow their exact business plan and get through the process, but there's certainly a lot of hoops to jump through. I think that after that, the intent was to see how it goes and sort of adjust accordingly. So this is all pretty new for us, and I think, you know, we'll see how much the market can bear. Frankly, I think it's just sort of a how much can the market bear? Let's approve as many as have a robust and interesting and innovative business plan and, you know, intend to use and fix up old buildings and locations that had been underutilized. So we're seeing this as sort of a redevelopment opportunity, but also an opportunity for as many businesses as possible that have kind of different approaches to get their foot in the door. And then I'm not sure what we'll adjust to, but it does seem like the process of vetting the applications through a committee of folks who are looking at all of their business plan and, you know, kind of making some judgments first is working well for us. It's nice to have staff really go through, you know, page by page and, you know, really look at their detailed business plan and then make recommendations to the council.
So, Larry, it sounds like from what they've been saying that eventually we're going to have enough retail outlets here in this area to support both locals and tourists who may want to come to this area. So that seems to me, as far as tourism goes, step one, have the infrastructure there, enough of it, right?
Yeah, and I think that they're really sensitive to the fact that they don't want to be the bottleneck in getting these things permitted.
So the question remains, though, what will tourism look like here? I mean, presumably there will be some people who will be interested in seeing how cannabis is produced. Maybe they would want to tour a farm. There would be other people maybe who would be more interested in consumption, right?
Yeah, I think that's the big question. You and I have talked many times about what would bring someone to Humboldt County as a as a cannabis tourist. Would they be interested in visiting farms? Would they be more interested in consumption lounges? And it just happens that I talked to Austin Allison, as you know, and he recently went to a production facility, a farm out in Willow Creek, and had what he describes as a really nice experience. So here's what he had to say.
I think there is a market for tourism, much like people wanting to go to breweries or wineries to see how you know, wine or beer is produced, go to the land to see where the grapes are grown. I think there's quite a few people who are really interested in seeing how cannabis is produced and made into products. I was able to tour a farm pretty recently and up in Willow Creek, who had a really, really wonderful vibe to their farm. They had an outdoor dining area where they served everybody local lunch, and it was overlooking the mountains out there in Willow Creek. And I just thought it was a really unique experience, and I could totally understand how people would want to see and do more of that.
That was Ward 4 City Councilperson Austin Allison talking about what sounds like a very, very nice visit to Willow Creek.
It does.
Gorgeous. You know, so that, obviously, there are going to be some people who are going to be interested in going to visit farms and enjoying, you know, the beautiful countryside. But that, yeah. There's not going to be too many farms in the middle of Eureka.
No, there aren't. And you're right. I think a lot of people would enjoy that experience, especially people who've never seen it growing, have no idea how it's produced. But I think at the same time, you also have to assume that there would be people coming here who are maybe more interested in consumption and trying the product.
Right? I think especially for people who come from out of state, from states mm-hmm. where it is not legal.
Exactly. And so where do they go? And up until now, there's been no way for that to happen for them. But we keep hearing that there are some ideas and maybe some changes afoot that can make that happen, right?
Yeah, very, very, until very, very recently, it was completely illegal. But within, I think, the last couple of weeks, mm-hmm. even that recently, the Eureka City Council voted in favor of establishing or permitting consumption lounges. So here's Kim Burgell to tell us more about that.
I think currently a block that we've had is this business of lounges. And we voted on council, it's been a couple weeks ago, the first phase of allowing that to kind of begin, because it doesn't make any sense either, whether you're local or tourist, if you go to purchase your product and have nowhere to use it legally, that's a problem. So working in that regard, and I think once we get to that position or to that place too, we'll be able to partner with some of these higher end hotels and give people opportunities, because people want to use, they do, they want to try it, they want to experience it. I mean, this is Humboldt, right? And so allowing and making that a place where it's safe, it's beautiful, just like our city, and draws people in, I think is going to be a real big boon for us.
So, yeah, we do hope that this is a boon for this area, for sure. But when you're talking about bringing a lot of tourists in from out of the area, certainly, at least it would seem to me, there would be a lot of policy decisions and discussions you would need to have along those lines. Here's Eureka City Councilmember Natalie Arroyo.
We wanted to provide businesses with the opportunity to do something innovative, and there aren't very many places in California where on-site consumption has, you know, is currently being allowed. So that's going to hopefully give, you know, one of the positive impacts is that might give folks, you know, a little leg up. If people are interested in cannabis tourism, and there are a few, you know, they could go to San Francisco and go to some, you know, high-end, you know, cannabis tourism restaurant type spots and have a tasting menu. And, you know, and then on their road trip, they might be able to come here too. You know, I think it is an attraction, and it is something that we hope those businesses will be able to capitalize on in a positive way. But we certainly wanted to factor in concerns about, you know, public health concerns and concerns around, you know, essentially drunk driving, you know, and imbibing and then, you know, going and not being, you know, functional or any other issues that might come up where people are just inebriated. And it's a little harder to establish what those limits are with cannabis, but we used what data is available from other states predominantly, particularly Colorado has a lot of similar businesses, and then look to what San Francisco is doing.
So, Larry, let's assume that the issues that Natalie Arroyo is talking about there are going to be solved by local and county officials talking with law enforcement and solving some of those problems. That still leaves the question of the cannabis economy and how it fits into the overall regional economy going forward. We know what it used to look like. I'm still curious about what it's going to look like in the future.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we only sort of knew what it looked like.
Well,
I mean,
that's true. Yeah.
We can measure things like county tax receipts, mm-hmm. and we have anecdotal evidence from retailers about how much business is down versus the heyday of, you know, 2005 or
yeah.
whatever.
Difficult to assess a cash economy for sure.
Yeah, we did not have super accurate records,
right.
I think, by design. But you know, there's a lot of question marks about how things are going to work going forward. We're just getting started, and we're by no means have we gotten to the point where we've worked out all the bumps in the road and we've adjusted to the disruption that legalization brought along.
Mm-hmm.
So I asked Susan Seaman and Austin Allison that very question. What role do they think the cannabis economy is going to play in the overall Humboldt economy? And of course, that requires quite a bit of speculation, but they were kind enough to speculate.
We'll have a little boom. which, you know, we are seeing the rates for warehousing go up. Lots of people are coming here. It's very exciting. We'll see a little boom. Everybody want to open a business. We'll figure out what the market will bear. A lot of them won't work. We'll see a dip. And then eventually I see cannabis as being one of our target industries. So we'll have aquaculture, diversified healthcare, and niche manufacturing and cannabis, and it will just be one of them. And it will be one that if we lose it, it will hurt our economy, but it won't devastate it. It's not like, you know, if they lost their grapes in Napa, who would they be?
Now that it's legalized, now that the price of the pound has dropped, now the industry is focusing a lot more towards not so much cultivation, but retail, research and development, testing, things like that. I'm just speculating
sure.
here, but probably maybe 10 or 20% of our economy. I don't think cannabis is a huge piece of the pie, but it's definitely a part of the pie. And so my guesstimate would be around 10 to 20% of our economy could still remain to be based off of cannabis. And that could always change, whether tourism is very popular or not, whether Humboldt can continue to market to other parts of the state with their legal cannabis products. That could change as time evolves. You know, this is such a new industry, and everyone's clamoring to be the first or be the most successful, and time is still telling. We're just not sure how things are going in the long run. But I know one local business, Popham Barkley, has been pretty successful. I think now they're in Oakland, LA, and Canada, since it's legal in Canada now. And they happen to be the largest employer for manufacturing in Eureka. And I think they'll continue to be successful and grow, and perhaps that metric of 10 to 20% for the economy will change.
So that's Eureka City Council person Austin Allison and incoming Eureka Mayor Susan Seaman. We put the same question to City Council person Natalie Arroyo, and here's what she had to say.
We're already seeing a dip in the cash market in cannabis, and probably a lot of the illicit market. You know, I think it may lessen a little bit, but I don't see it going away completely. You know, I think this is just purely speculative.
Sure.
But, you know, I think that it's a product that people feel an attachment to locally. It's part of the local culture. And I don't think that'll go away anytime soon. But I imagine we'll see a little dip in the overall profits. And, you know, from you know, the mid-2000s era, where it was, you know, sort of the heyday of money making in the black market cannabis world. And now that, you know, now that there's a lot more hoops and a lot more costs associated with going legal, you know, I imagine that it'll maintain its status as an important part of the Humboldt economy, but it'll dip a little from those days.
So just to follow on that, maybe we should all just give ourselves a pat on the collective back for, at least to some extent, figuring out this brand new world that has landed on us here after Proposition 64. Here's the thing, though, as we go into a break, there could be more changes on the way coming at us next year. There's going to be a new Congress sworn in January, and the rumor mill is that there could be federal changes to cannabis policy on the way. How will we deal with that? We'll ask that question next. You're listening to the Humboldt Chronicles. Back in just a moment.
Before we close here, something to keep an eye on. We want to draw your attention to a piece of news that got very little notice in the national coverage of the November elections, but did get some mentions among the journalists who follow the cannabis issue specifically. It has to do with one particular congressional race down in Texas, the 32nd Congressional District, which includes part of the city of Dallas and some of the North Dallas suburbs. Republican Pete Sessions has held that seat since 2003. While in Congress, Pete Sessions made a name for himself with a reefer madness approach to the cannabis issue, even opposing allowing individual states to make determinations regarding marijuana. As chairman of the House Rules Committee, he had the opportunity to function as a roadblock to just about any legislative attempt to reform marijuana laws. And he took that opportunity at every turn, successfully blockading progress. Well, Pete Sessions is no longer there. He was defeated in his reelection bid by Democrat Colin Allred, a civil rights attorney who worked in the Obama administration. Allred is a vocal supporter of medical marijuana, especially when it comes to the treatment of veterans who are dealing with PTSD. So, this issue has yet another friend in Washington. What does that mean? Well, we keep hearing that some movement on the cannabis issue federally could happen after the new Congress is sworn in January. What that might be is up for debate. A simple rescheduling of marijuana? Maybe. Will it be detailed legislation that turns the issue over to the states? Maybe. Something else entirely? Maybe. We don't know yet. We also don't know if the political will actually exists. There's a big difference between campaign rhetoric and end results. What we do know is that we're still dealing with the local changes and the new California cannabis economy following statewide legalization. Federal legalization would set in motion a whole new transitional phase that we would have to navigate, including issues of interstate commerce, banking, taxation, and a lot more. If that's what's on tap for 2019, rest assured, we will be here to help you sort it all out as best we can.
It sure seems like we're going to need someone to help navigate through this. I mean, part of a theme that keeps returning through all of this is that we don't really know, even now, how things are going to go, what it's going to look like.
We don't. It's a multi-layered question. I mean, even when you're thinking about there's a new Congress that's going to be sworn in January. Democrats have the House, but the Republicans still have the Senate. That would seem to be a problem. Yet, as we have seen nationwide, Republicans are beginning to see this as an economic issue more than a culture war issue. So I think that's why a lot of people are talking about the fact that some things could be happening federally after January. We're just going to have to wait and see.
You know, and the thing that I kept thinking of as I was having these discussions last week with the Eureka City Council people was that we can make a lot of plans and do a lot of things here and implement policy, and we'll get better and better at things as we learn. But really, what happens at the federal level is going to have a huge effect on what happens here or what doesn't happen at the federal level.
It's really the only way to solve some of the bigger problems that include banking and use of the mail and things like that. That's really the only solution is a federal solution to that. And, you know, speaking of federal, our Congressman Jared Huffman is somebody who has not shied away from this issue. He's spoken out on it a lot, and I think he hears some of the same rumors that we do, so we'll see what happens.
Yeah, I chatted with him as it happens the other day, and this was a post-election interview, so my question to him was that very thing. Given the results of the election, how does legalization of marijuana at the federal level look?
I think marijuana is going to be one of those issues that is now allowed to come to the floor, probably regularly, by way of amendments and maybe even standalone bills. And there's a lot of energy. As you know, more and more states are legalizing cannabis. So I would expect this next Congress to certainly come close, if not finally cross that threshold of putting a cannabis bill on the president's desk. So I see a lot of opportunities.
So, Larry, Congressman Huffman is talking about the possibility, the real possibility, he seems to think, that some sort of legislation could move its way through the House of Representatives, at least. But he mentioned the president's desk, which means it also goes to the Senate and gets approval there and winds up in the Oval Office. What would a bill like that look like?
Well, that's what I was wondering, you know, because there's so many different facets to the prohibition of marijuana. Mm-hmm. Like, what would be the way in which you would all of a sudden remove all, like, the banking restrictions, the interstate transportation restrictions, all of those things? And I, as we'll hear from Congressman Huffman in a second, the first step, and a big part of it, seems to be removing the classification of marijuana as a Schedule I drug.
Well, my understanding of this is taking it off Schedule I is the cleanest way to do it. Now, there may be some policy guidance and regulations across various agencies that would need to be modernized to reflect that. But Schedule I is sort of where all this comes from. And removing cannabis from Schedule I should open the door to banking and using the mail and doing all the other things an ordinary legal business does.
All right. So according to Lisa Huffman, and this makes sense to me. It seems like getting it off Schedule 1 is that has to be done no matter what else is done. Like, that's the most important thing. But it seems like you're still going to be left with kind of state-by-state regulations. Some states may permit it, some may not. What happens if a state says, I don't even want it being driven through my state? How do we handle those issues?
Well, you can certainly imagine some of the deepest red states saying, we're not going along with this at all. And so then what do you do? And it has made some in Congress begin to think about the kind of dysfunction that would follow something like that. Let me give you an example. Just earlier this month, it was the first time people in Massachusetts could buy recreational pot legally. So it's legal there now, much like it is here. Some in their congressional delegation have since completely changed their mind about federal legalization and are now on board. One of them is Representative Joe Kennedy III, and he's looking at this from the same perspective of saying, okay, if it is rescheduled, there's still going to be the need for some legislation, some policy guidance, so that the states know exactly what they can and can't do on this issue, so we don't end up with this patchwork of conflicting laws that interferes with interstate commerce, and then we have to go back and redo more legislation. So let's try to get this right the first time.
So it sounds like even after marijuana is removed from Schedule 1, there still is a fair amount of legislative work to be done.
I think there is, because this is brand new, and it's bringing a brand new product to the market that's never been there before, and it has been a part of the culture war. So there are going to be some states that just do not want to do this. And so there's going to have to be policy guidance from the federal government for it to work.
Yeah. You know, speaking of a patchwork of different laws and different things, one thing that I was always wondering about is, you know how there are farm subsidies,
yeah,
and there are price supports.
Corn and soybeans.
Right. As you know, you spent some time in that part of the world. And so I was curious, well, if you took it off Schedule 1, would that make cannabis eligible for the same sort of price supports and crop insurance and so forth that wheat and corn are eligible for?
I think, to be fair, it would have to, don't you think?
Well, I would think, to be fair, it would, but I put that question to Huffman, and he, this is what he said.
All right.
There may come a time when that is the case, but, you know, all of those commodity crops have their own lobby that has managed to get special programs and subsidies and things like that inserted into various USDA programs, and cannabis is a long way from, having that status.
So there we go. I guess I wouldn't count on those subsidies coming through just exactly yet.
I wouldn't either, for a whole lot of reasons. One is the idea of agricultural subsidies is a whole issue on its own. So even if it were rescheduled, even if there were some federal remedy that made its way through Congress, you still have the issue of farm subsidies separately. Some in Congress don't think that subsidies are a good idea from the get-go.
For anything. Yeah, corn or wheat or anything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's even an issue in the Midwest. So there's that. So yeah, I think you're right. There's I don't think we should be counting those chickens until they're hatched.
Yeah, right. Well, that's down the road. At least if our local business people could open a bank account, that'd probably be
at least we could start there, huh?
Yeah, that'd be a helpful thing. So what did we learn today, Chuck?
Oh, so much.
You're usually asking me this question.
Yeah, well, you know, I think for me, one of the things that I've been a little skeptical about, but that I was glad to hear a lot of information about tonight, is the idea of tourism. And we've talked a lot about it. It's been talked about in the community a lot. But the question I've always had is, how does that happen? Where is the infrastructure? But tonight we had a lot of people talking about the fact that, yes, there are farms that people could tour. And yes, the city of Eureka is moving forward on creating lounges where consumption for tourists would be a possibility. So that makes me feel a lot more optimistic that tourism could happen here to some degree. We don't know what it would look like exactly, but at least some of the roadblocks that were in my mind about it, I think, are beginning to be dealt with.
Yeah, I found it very encouraging to hear city council people kind of taking the attitude of, we can't create this industry ourselves. The thing that we can do, however, is give it the best chance of succeeding. And
that
seems
to
be the mindset. And I think it's an innovative idea. If you look throughout all of California, at least as far as I know, the only places that have talked about on-premises consumption have been San Francisco and Los Angeles.
Right.
So you got two giant cities and Eureka.
Right.
And as far as I know, that's it. So it's encouraging to see us leading the way.
Well, that's a really good point. And for sure, a place like this, because of what there is to do in the Bay Area and in the Los Angeles area, we can't compete with a lot of that. But not everybody wants a vacation in an urban area like that. So we would, if we make this available, we would be able to get some of the tourists, for sure. And there's no doubt that some people would spend a day or two in San Francisco, and maybe they would spend the rest of their week or 10 days up here. Who knows? But the fact is, it looks like we're going to be taking down some of the roadblocks, and that's a big thing.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, the idea on tourism was sort of the same thing as marijuana's role in our economy as a whole,
mm-hmm.
that, you know, tourism is going to be a piece of the puzzle, not the whole thing,
mm-hmm.
and cannabis is going to be a piece of our overall economic situation, but obviously not the whole thing. We've got other stuff going on.
And we need to continue to develop other things as well. You know, we need a diverse economy around here. We've always known that, and we still need that, because we don't know exactly what portion of the economy is going to be driven by cannabis in the future. We don't know yet.
Yep.
So we still, I think, need to be going down a lot of different economic development roads. Let's hope.
Yep. All right. Well, nice job. Thank you for your kind.
This was one where I learned service. A lot.
Yeah.
I mean, this was one where I learned a lot. I'm Chuck Rogers with producer Larry Trask. This edition of the Humboldt Chronicles will be posted soon at 941lounge.com, LostCoastOutpost.com, and at iTunes for listening and downloading. We want to thank again our kind sponsors. We wouldn't be able to do it without you. Humboldt Patient Resource Center, Eco Groovy Deals, Satori Wellness, Heart of Humboldt, and Sensa Valley. We will be back to see you again on the third Wednesday of December, so that'll be December the 19th at 6 p.m. See you then.